Have you ever stared down a path that seemed, completely logical, maybe even secure, only to feel this like undeniable pull towards something totally different, something maybe riskier, less mapped out, but just profoundly you?
Oh, definitely. It's a real moment of truth, isn't it?
Exactly. Where just one single, maybe kind of courageous decision can completely redirect your whole life's path. Think about those moments, maybe in your own journey, when you chose the less obvious route.
It takes guts.
Well, today we're actually embarking on a deep dive into precisely that kind of story. We're exploring the really captivating career of Jake Johansson.
Yes, great subject.
He's an American comedian, writer, actor, and his journey is just, well, it's like a masterclass in dedication, in making unique choices, and really cultivating a truly distinctive comedic voice. So our mission today is to unpack the story of this talent who didn't just like stumble into success. He seemed to meticulously build this remarkable, enduring legacy, breaking records in late night television.
That Letterman record is something else.
Oh, absolutely. And earning this really special place, in the hearts of his peers and fans. And we'll be drawing all our insights today from his Wikipedia entry, which honestly, surprisingly, holds some truly profound lessons on artistic conviction.
And what's truly fascinating here, I think, is that this isn't just, a biography of a comedian. It's a really powerful illustration of the profound impact of conviction. I mean,
Right.
the sheer strength it takes sometimes to say no to what looks like an unmissable golden opportunity.
Yeah, that Costanza story.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's a testament, really, to how consistent, high-quality work delivered with this unique and sort of unyielding perspective can lead to just unparalleled recognition and a very specific lasting influence. So for anyone out there navigating their own career, especially maybe in creative or, unconventional fields, this deep dive offers some genuinely insightful aha moments about finding and crucially maintaining your unique artistic integrity, even when the mainstream is like waving big checks at you.
I couldn't agree more. This is really a chance to explore a career forged not on, fleeting fame, but on this bedrock of just undeniable talent and an unwavering commitment to a very personal vision.
Well said.
So let's delve into what makes Jake Johansson's story so compelling.
Let's do it.
Okay, let's unpack this really remarkable journey, starting from what I think for many people might strike them as the most unlikely of beginnings for a stand-up legend. So Jake Johansson entered the world July 28th, 1960, right in the heartland, Iowa City, Iowa. Now, his early academic life, particularly in the early 1980s at Iowa State University, gives us this really intriguing glimpse into a mind that, well, initially appeared to be pointed in a completely different direction, almost diametrically opposed, you could say.
Indeed, yeah. The geographical context itself is, I think, incredibly telling. Growing up in the Midwest, far from the big entertainment hubs like LA or New York.
Right, not the typical starting point for a comic.
Not at all. It often implies a more, let's say, grounded, maybe less overtly theatrical upbringing. It's a place where practicality is often valued, where you observe the world around you with a certain straightforwardness.
Makes sense.
And for a comedian, this kind of foundational worldview can actually be invaluable. It can foster a certain outsider perspective, allowing you to keenly observe and pinpoint those subtle absurdities and everyday ironies.
Things that maybe someone steeped in a more performative culture might miss.
Exactly. Might just take for granted. It's often about finding the humor in the mundane, in those universal experiences that resonate really deeply, rather than, say, chasing the avant-garde or the purely edgy.
And when you look at his academic choices back then, they are, well, they're nothing short of astounding, especially considering the path he eventually took.
You really
His
are.
initial major, get this, veterinary medicine.
Right. Vet bed.
I mean, just pause for a second and really think about that. That's a field demanding, obviously, immense scientific rigor,
Oh, yeah, tons of science.
but also deep empathy, incredibly precise diagnostic skills, and this really fundamental desire to help living creatures. It's a world built on observable facts, right? Meticulous problem-solving, tangible results.
The contrast is just stark, isn't it? Between vet, med, and the often chaotic, unpredictable world of stand-up comedy.
Totally different universes.
It immediately suggests a mind capable of intense focus, a really methodical approach to complex problems, and this capacity for detailed patient observation.
Which could be useful for comedy, actually.
Absolutely. What kind of person pursues such a demanding scientific field? It points to an underlying analytical mind, definitely someone who isn't just skimming the surface. And this capacity for meticulous observation, for dissecting complex systems, understand cause and effect, these traits, whether he knew it or not, could absolutely manifest in his comedic style later on.
How so, you think?
Well, imagine a style built on really precise language, maybe keen insights into human behavior gleaned from that kind of careful study. The ability to dissect a situation and then reassemble it for maximum humorous effect.
Like diagnosing a problem but making it funny.
Kind of.
Yeah.
The diagnostic precision and observational skills needed to figure out what's wrong with an animal, it could be surprisingly transferable to crafting tight, effective jokes where, you know, every single word serves a specific purpose. Very economical.
And then, as if one rigorous scientific major wasn't enough of a detour.
Right. You'd think that was enough analytical work.
He later changed his major to chemical engineering.
Chemical engineering. Another highly technical, highly analytical discipline.
Arguably even more focused on systems, reactions, logical progression. It's all about breaking down incredibly complex problems into their basic parts, right?
Uh-huh. Understanding how those parts interact.
Yeah.
Predicting outcomes.
Yeah.
This second demanding academic choice really reinforces that pattern, doesn't it? A pattern of deep intellectual pursuit, a mind just naturally predisposed to structure and mechanics.
So how does chemical engineering translate to jokes?
Well, if you think about chemical engineering's focus on input, process, output, you know, understanding how different elements react to create a specific result, it's honestly not a huge stretch to imagine how that might inform the art of joke construction.
Okay, I'm following.
Comedy, at its core, is often about setting up a premise, right? Which you can maybe think of as your initial chemical compound or reaction.
The setup.
And then delivering a punchline that's the logical, though often really unexpected, outcome of that setup. The payoff.
Okay.
Like a formula.
Almost. You could imagine his jokes having this really precise setup and payoff, almost like a comedic equation, where the audience is led down a logical path, only to be sort of blindsided by surprising yet perfectly understandable twist.
Clean, maybe elegant humor. Yeah, exactly. Built on an almost engineered framework where every word serves a deliberate function and the timing is just meticulously calculated for maximum impact. It suggests he really understood the mechanics of humor, perhaps instinctively at first, from that background.
So we have this picture emerging, a brilliant analytical mind steeped in science and logic, capable of dissecting these complex problems, and then the pivotal moment.
The big turn.
Jake Johansson ultimately left college after 3 years.
Yeah.
And this isn't just, you know, casually dropping out. It feels like a profound declaration of intent, a complete redirection.
This decision, like you said, is absolutely the true turning point. This is the moment the future comedian really starts to emerge, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, think about the sheer bravery and conviction required to abandon not one, but two really demanding academic paths.
Paths with clear career options, stable options.
Totally. Stable, respected trajectories, right? To chase this completely different, high-risk, often financially pretty uncertain, dreamlike stand-up comedy.
What makes someone do that?
Well, what catalysts might lead someone to make such a huge life pivot? It rarely happens without some kind of undeniable inner calling. Right. A passion so strong, it just outweighs all the practical considerations, all the societal expectations.
He's saying this logical path isn't my path.
Exactly. It's not just a change of heart. It's this powerful statement about self-discovery, about honoring an authentic, maybe unconventional dream. And it really sets the stage for everything that follows in his unique and ultimately celebrated career. It's a real leap of faith, probably born from a deep, deep understanding of himself.
Absolutely. It wasn't just a pivot. It was, like you said, a full-on deliberate leap. And that leap, after leaving Iowa State, took him all the way across the country.
Right.
Johansson relocated to San Francisco, California. And the reason, explicitly stated, in order to pursue a career in comedy.
Yeah. Not a whim.
No. This was focused almost like a scientific mission in a way. To crack the code of comedy itself.
And the deliberate move to San Francisco in the 1980s is just incredibly significant. You have to understand the context.
Yeah, tell us about that scene.
That era, the 80s in SF, it was a genuine hotbed for burgeoning comedic talent, a really vibrant ecosystem where new voices could find their footing. They could experiment with different styles, really develop their craft.
Like a comedy incubator.
Totally. Cities like San Francisco alongside New York were the absolute epicenters of stand-up then. They offered just countless open mics, small clubs, bigger venues where you could hone your material night after night after night.
Competing with some big names, probably.
Oh, yeah. Often competing with and learning from some of the best minds in comedy. You know, Robin Williams, Dana Carvey, Bobcat Goldthwait, a lot of major talents found their early footing right there.
Wow.
So this relocation, it wasn't some casual dabbling in a hobby. This was a focused, intentional pursuit.
Yeah.
It signaled this immense level of commitment and, frankly, self-belief.
He had to believe in himself to do that.
Absolutely. It meant immersing himself entirely in that scene, facing really stiff competition, and just relentlessly working to find his unique voice among all those other voices.
You can almost feel the energy of those San Francisco comedy clubs in the 80s, can't you? I mean, the smoky rooms, the anticipation.
The raw talent.
The raw talent on display, yeah. The intense competition among all these aspiring comics and that palpable hunger for new, distinct voices. It must have been an incredible, almost like intoxicating environment.
Yeah, high pressure, but exciting.
And it was right there in that, you know, crucible that he made his debut at Cobb's Comedy Club in San Francisco.
And Cobb's isn't just a club. It's a historically significant venue, a true institution in the comedy world, especially on the West Coast.
So a big deal for a first gig.
Huge deal.
Mm.
Performing there for the first time is absolutely a trial by fire. It's that moment where the theoretical pursuit of comedy meets the practical, often pretty unforgiving reality of stand-up.
Instant judgment.
Instant, unfiltered feedback from a live audience. Every pause, every inflection, every punchline is immediately judged right there in the moment. It's where you learn if your carefully engineered jokes actually land.
If the formula works.
Exactly. If your timing is sharp enough, and if your unique perspective can truly connect with a room full of strangers, this is the crucible where a comedian's mettle is truly tested, where you build resilience, and where those raw elements of performance get refined into actual artistry.
And he didn't just, you know, survive that trial by fire. He clearly thrived.
Really did.
By 1986, just a few years into this dedicated pursuit, Jake Johansson had won the 11th annual San Francisco International Comedy Competition.
Which is huge. A huge early validation of his talent and an absolutely critical stepping stone in any comedian's career back then.
What did winning that mean practically?
Well, the San Francisco International Comedy Competition is a really prestigious event. It's launched the careers of numerous comedians who went on to national, even international fame. Winning that award, particularly at that relatively early stage in his career, gave him instant credibility.
Got him noticed.
Totally. It drew significant industry attention, put him right on the radar of agents, bookers, television scouts, and maybe more importantly, it provided a very strong foundation for future success. It signaled to everyone that this wasn't just another aspiring comic. This was someone with a truly distinctive voice, a compelling stage presence, and the proven ability to perform at a consistently high level under pressure. It was like a tangible mark of his arrival.
So that early win really propelled him, didn't it? From being just, you know, a promising newcomer to a genuinely recognized talent, it set the stage for much broader national exposure.
Absolutely.
It made people sit up and take notice. It confirmed that this analytical mind from Iowa had definitely found its true calling on the comedy stage.
The engineer found his new formula.
Exactly. Now, building on that early success and the recognition he gained in San Francisco, Jake Johansson really started to establish his distinctive voice in the stand-up world. The 1990s especially proved to be a really pivotal decade for him, elevating him to national prominence.
Absolutely. The 90s were in many ways a golden era for stand-up comedy, and getting an HBO special during that time. That was the definitive benchmark of success.
The ultimate goal.
Pretty much. It was a true mark of having made it. And during this period, Johansson starred in his own HBO comedy special. This will take about an hour.
Great title.
Yeah, classic Johansson understatement, maybe. But this wasn't just another gig or some minor appearance. It was a definitive statement of his arrival, a curated hour of his best, most polished material.
What did an HBO special mean back then?
Oh, HBO specials in the 90s offered just unparalleled reach, immense prestige. It cemented a comedian's status as a truly top-tier talent. It meant you had an hour of meticulously crafted, unique material, honed through years and years of club work, finally ready for prime time. It was a monumental achievement, really required incredible writing and performing discipline.
I can only imagine the intense process involved, developing, refining, then ultimately delivering an entire hour of completely fresh, unique material for such a high-stakes platform.
Huge pressure.
It's a massive undertaking, right? Where every single word, every pause, every gesture is scrutinized by millions.
Yeah.
And the critical reception for This Will Take About an Hour was truly exceptional. It went far beyond just typical comedy reviews.
It really did.
The special was famously listed as one of the 10 best television shows by People magazine in 1992. Not best comedy specials, best shows.
Which is an extraordinary piece of recognition, and it speaks volumes about the quality and, crucially, the broad appeal of his work.
Right, not just for comedy nerds.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It wasn't just considered one of the best comedy specials of the year. It was lauded as one of the best television shows overall by a mainstream, widely read publication like People magazine. That means it transcended the niche audience of dedicated comedy fans and resonated with a much, much wider audience.
What do you think that says about his style?
Well, it indicates both broad appeal and significant critical impact. What qualities must his performance and material have possessed to achieve that? It points to a style of humor that was not only genuinely funny, but also intelligent, deeply observant, maybe even insightful. Something that broke through conventional comedic boundaries to connect on a deeper, more resonant level with viewers who might not typically even seek out stand-up. It suggests a real universality in his humor.
That kind of critical endorsement, you know, being recognized as one of the best TV shows across all genres, that truly cemented his status as a nationally recognized and highly regarded comedian.
No question.
But it wasn't just the critics and the public taking notice, right? His peers and the entire industry were also affirming his talent.
Precisely. That peer recognition is huge in comedy. In 1994, he was nominated as Best Male Stand-Up Comedian for the American Comedy Award.
Okay, that's big.
Yeah, this nomination is crucial because it signifies a direct acknowledgement from his peers and the industry at large, the people who truly understand the craft, the grind, the innovation required in stand-up.
They know what goes into it.
They really do. The American Comedy Awards were highly significant for recognizing comedic excellence across various platforms, film, TV, live performance. So, such a nomination suggests that his unique style, his compelling writing, his impactful delivery, it all resonated widely within the professional comedy community. It marked him as a real standout among the best working comedians of that era. It's an affirmation that his work wasn't just popular, but also artistically respected by those who really understood and contributed to the art form itself.
These accolades really underscore the fact that his rise wasn't just about getting laughs from an audience, which, let's be honest, is incredibly hard on its own.
The hardest part.
But also about earning this profound critical and professional respect within the comedy community itself. He had clearly found his distinctive voice, and it was resonating on all fronts. It established him as a real comedic force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, he'd arrived.
Okay, now here's where it gets really interesting, I think. We delve into some of the iconic connections and the enduring appeal that truly defined Jake Johansson's career.
I think I know where you're going.
This next point is one of those legendary what-if scenarios in entertainment history. A true fork-in-the-road moment that just speaks volumes about personal conviction.
This is a truly remarkable anecdote, isn't it? A decision that's become kind of a defining legend within comedy circles.
Tell us.
According to none other than Jerry Seinfeld himself, the co-creator and star of, well, arguably one of television's most iconic sitcoms ever.
Understatement.
Jake Johansson was originally wanted for the role of George Costanza in Seinfeld.
Wow.
And perhaps even more incredibly, Johansson refused the part.
Okay. Let's just sit with that for a moment.
Seinfeld.
Seinfeld. It went on to become not just a successful show, but one of the most iconic, culturally pervasive, financially lucrative sitcoms of all time. A true cultural phenomenon that completely reshaped television comedy.
Absolutely defined the 90s sitcom landscape.
And George Costanza, as famously and just indelibly played by Jason Alexander, became this instantly recognizable, endlessly quoted character, a huge part of the show's enduring legacy.
A legendary character.
So to turn down that role, knowing what Seinfeld became, it has immense, almost mind-boggling implications. It's a what-if scenario that truly boggles the mind and makes you wonder about the depth of conviction behind a choice like that.
It truly does. And the speculation here is absolutely fascinating because it sheds so much light on Jake Johansson's artistic priorities at that time.
Why would he do it?
Right. Why might a comedian at that stage of his career, when a role in a potential hit sitcom could offer just unprecedented fame, massive financial security, a global platform, why refuse that opportunity?
It seems crazy on the surface.
On the surface, maybe. But this wasn't just about saying no to fame. It feels like a profound affirmation of a very specific artistic path he was already on.
Sticking with stand-up.
Perhaps. Maybe he valued that direct, unmediated connection of stand-up. You know, the immediate feedback from a live audience, the freedom to evolve material every single night, the complete creative autonomy over his own voice.
Which you don't get in the sitcom.
Not in the same way, no. Maybe he valued that more than the collaborative, fixed script nature of a sitcom. Even one with such potential global reach. Maybe he believed that becoming an actor primarily known for a character role, however iconic, would somehow compromise his identity as a stand-up comedian, the path he had dedicated his entire being to forging up to that point.
That takes incredible focus.
It really does. This decision profoundly highlights J.J. Hansen's unwavering artistic conviction and his deep, deep commitment to his craft. It speaks to a profound artistic integrity that, clearly for him, outweighed the potential for mainstream superstardom. He chose the path of a singular, evolving stand-up voice over the immensely popular but character-bound ensemble role.
It's incredible to consider the trajectory of Jason Alexander's career, which, you know, became largely defined by George Costanza.
For better or worse, yeah.
Versus Johansson's continued focused stand-up career. This anecdote offers a truly unique glimpse into the immense pressures, the temptations, the deeply personal choices faced by performers right on the cusp of massive fame.
It's a defining moment.
It really is. It speaks to a deeply ingrained sense of self and purpose that clearly guided the rest of his career. He knew exactly who he was and what he truly wanted to contribute to the world of comedy.
And this profound commitment to his stand-up craft is further highlighted by his continued output and evolution over the years.
Right. He didn't just rest after the 90s.
Not at all. In 2010, which is nearly two decades after his highly acclaimed HBO debut, Johansson starred in his second major comedy special.
Oh.
This one was titled I Love You, and it aired on Showtime.
Okay, Showtime, another big platform.
Yep.
And the fact that he released a second major special almost 20 years after his HBO debut, that speaks volumes, doesn't it? About his longevity, his sustained relevance.
His work ethic.
And his relentless work ethic, exactly. In the ever-evolving comedy landscape, it demonstrates that his unique voice continued to resonate with audiences, and crucially, that he consistently developed new, fresh material over a really sustained period.
Which is incredibly hard to do.
So hard, especially in comedy, where audiences constantly demand originality. He wasn't just resting on past laurels. He was still actively creating, performing, challenging himself.
And this special also came with another mark of industry respect. It was directed and produced by Emery Emery.
Oh, okay. Known for.
A respected figure within the comedy community, maybe best known as the editor of The Aristocrats, that landmark, often controversial, documentary about comedy and one particular joke.
Ah, right. The Aristocrats.
Yeah. So the connection to Emery Emery adds another layer of credibility to the project. It suggests a collaboration focused on maintaining a high standard of quality, exploring comedic depth, maybe even a certain edginess. It further solidified Johansson's reputation as an artist whose work is both thoughtful and consistently entertaining. This special unequivocally reaffirmed his position as an enduring and respected voice in stand-up comedy, not just some nostalgic figure from the 90s.
And it feels like a remarkable full circle moment, doesn't it? To underscore his deep connection to his roots and his enduring impact. In that same year, 2010, Johansson was the star headliner of the inaugural Iowa Comedy Festival.
Back home again?
Back home, performing on October 16th, 2010, at People's Court in downtown Des Moines.
And headlining an inaugural festival, especially in your home state of Iowa, that's a truly significant honor.
Yeah, it says a lot.
It really does. It not only speaks to his considerable drawing power and his sustained popularity, but also to his status as a revered figure, someone capable of lending gravitas and prestige to a brand new event.
Kicking it off right.
Exactly. This performance symbolically brought his whole journey full circle, didn't it? From leaving Iowa as this aspiring comedian, maybe feeling like a bit of an outlier.
Yeah, the engineer turned comic.
To returning as a celebrated artist whose success completely validated that original brave leap he took years before. You could almost imagine the sense of immense pride and accomplishment, performing for a home crowd, maybe friends and family there, after achieving all that national and international success. It's a powerful moment of recognition for his roots, his unwavering dedication, and the unique path he carved out for himself.
It really does bridge his early life in Iowa with his seasoned, successful career, weaving together the threads of his personal and professional journey beautifully.
Yeah.
But perhaps the most astounding testament to his consistent quality and unique appeal, The absolute pinnacle, maybe, of his enduring legacy is his relationship with an undisputed king of late-night television.
Ah, yes. The Letterman connection. This is truly unprecedented in the annals of late-night television history, I think. It speaks to a singular kind of connection.
What's the specific detail?
Jake Johansson is described simply as a favorite of David Letterman.
Which is high praise in itself.
Huge praise from Letterman. But that simple phrase, while accurate, masks an absolutely astonishing fact. He made the all-time record of 46 appearances as the featured Friday night comic on The Late Show with David Letterman.
46 appearances.
46 times.
Yeah.
As the featured Friday night comic.
Let that sink in. Just being a favorite of a late night legend like David Letterman is a rare and distinct honor in itself.
Extremely rare.
It implies this deep level of trust, reliability, and a profound appreciation for his very specific, often kind of dry and observational brand of humor.
Which fit Letterman perfectly.
Absolutely. Letterman, himself a master of unconventional comedy, clearly saw a kindred spirit or just a uniquely brilliant comedic mind in Johansson. But 46 appearances as the featured Friday night comic, that is an absolutely unprecedented number. It illustrates an unparalleled, almost symbiotic relationship between a comedian and a late night host spanning decades.
It's not just a statistic, is it? It's a testament to a unique connection built on mutual respect and just consistent excellence time after time.
This record demands a much deeper look, though. What does it truly take for a comedian to earn such a consistent, recurring, almost cherished slot on a major late night show for so many years?
Well, it requires, first off, consistently fresh, high quality material for each and every one of those 46 sets.
A new type 5, basically, every time?
Pretty much. Material that holds up to repeat viewing, evolving audiences, but it's more than just the material. It also requires a unique stage presence, an undeniable charisma, and a rapport that resonates deeply with both the host, specifically Letterman, and the audience.
And Letterman was known for being particular.
Famously particular. His comedic sensibilities were unique. He appreciated intelligence, a certain deadpan delivery, and ability to find humor in really unexpected places. Johansson's style, likely built on those analytical foundations we talked about earlier.
The engineering brain?
Yeah. With its precise language, its observational wit, its often understated delivery, it just perfectly aligned with Letterman's own sensibilities. It speaks to this consistent ability to deliver, to connect on that very specific wavelength, and to always bring something new and compelling to the table. This isn't just a number. It's a legacy built on consistent excellence, an unwavering work ethic, and a deep intuitive understanding of what truly worked in that particular late night format. It created a bond with a legendary host that, honestly, may never be replicated.
The sheer volume of material required for 46 distinct sets, the constant pressure of that late night audience, and the consistent delivery that made him a staple on one of television's most iconic shows, it all just speaks volumes about his enduring talent and his incredible work ethic.
Truly remarkable consistency.
This record unequivocally solidifies his place in the annals of late night television and stand-up comedy history. It makes him a true icon of consistency and quality. It's an almost unfathomable achievement, really, a testament to a performer who truly mastered his craft and found his perfect audience, or at least his perfect host.
And perfect fit for that show.
Right. Now, while stand-up comedy was undeniably Jake Johansson's core, his passion, the absolute foundation of his career, his talent wasn't limited solely to that stage, was it?
No, not at all. He also ventured into the dynamic worlds of film and television, showcasing a broader range of his performing abilities.
Okay, let's look at that.
Yes. His filmography, while maybe not as extensive as his, say, Letterman appearances, clearly demonstrates a willingness to explore different facets of the entertainment industry and adapt his talents.
What kind of roles did he take?
Well, let's look at some of them. They span over two decades, actually.
Yeah.
In 1993, he appeared in Loaded Weapon 1 as a drug dealer, probably a smaller comedic part.
Likely.
Then, in 1994, he took on the role of John Peter Toohey in Mrs. Parker and The Vicious Circle. That's a more nuanced character in a period drama about the Algonquin Round Table.
Oh, interesting switch.
Yeah. He was Bill Bailey in Breakfast of Champions in 1999, the Kurt Vonnegut adaptation. Later that year, he played Lance in a film called Suckers. More recently, you see him as Elena's dad in American Dirtbags in 2015 and Richard in Stars and Shorts. No Ordinary Love in 2016.
Okay, that's a pretty diverse set of appearances right there. You see a range, like you said, from what seem like smaller, punchy, comedic parts like the drug dealer,
right,
to more nuanced, character-driven roles in films that span really different styles and critical receptions. Like, take his role in Mrs. Parker and The Vicious Circle. That's a period piece. Yeah.
Very literary, sophisticated setting.
How did Johansson, known for his modern observational wit, adapt to something like that? Did he bring comedy to it or play against type?
It suggests versatility, doesn't it?
Yeah.
His presence in these films suggests a reach beyond just pure stand-up, indicating he could hold his own in diverse acting contexts. And these roles also demonstrate his impressive longevity, with film appearances stretching across more than two decades, which is a real feat in itself in that industry. And it's fascinating to consider how his, you know, precise comedic timing and sharp observational skills, so finely honed in stand-up, might translate into his acting performances.
How do you think it would?
Well, stand-up demands this acute awareness of rhythm, delivery, audience reaction, which can be invaluable for comedic acting, obviously, but maybe also for bringing a particular nuance or subtext to more dramatic or character-driven roles. He could leverage that inherent understanding of human behavior, of pauses, the weight of words, even when delivering lines someone else wrote. Whether it's a quick cameo or a more developed part, his unique comedic intelligence would likely shine through, maybe in subtle ways that only a keen observer would really catch.
And his television appearances seem even more varied, showing him in several different capacities, highlighting just how adaptable he really is.
Oh yeah, his TV credits really offer a comprehensive picture of his versatility and his willingness to explore different creative avenues.
Like what?
Okay, so back in 1994, he actually hosted a show called Two Drink Minimum for two seasons. Hosting is a completely different skill set from stand-up, right?
Right.
Requires improv, interviewing, guiding a conversation.
Definitely.
Then in 1996, he popped up as Kahuna in an episode of Weird Science and Officer Jones in a TV film back-to-back. That same year, significantly, he played himself on The Larry Sanders Show.
Oh, that's huge. Playing yourself on Larry Sanders.
Exactly. In the iconic episode, Where's the Love? He also hosted another TV film, Fairway to Heaven. Then moving into 97, he is Dr. H. Longo on Married with Children.
Bit of a departure there.
And notably, lent his distinct voice to the character of Jake in two episodes of Dr. Katz, Professional Therapist, in 97 and 99.
Ah, Dr. Katz, perfect fit.
Totally. Then he hosted Late Friday in 2001, another TV film, and appeared as Wayne in, like, you know.
Yeah.
Also in 2001.
Wow, okay. That's a truly busy and diverse resume. His recurring role as a host for shows and TV films is particularly noteworthy, like you said, precisely because it demands a very different set of skills from a stand-up.
Yeah, broader presence.
Requires a broader, more facilitative stage presence, the ability to engage with guests, often a lot of spontaneous wit. And playing himself on The Larry Sanders Show, that's especially significant, isn't it?
It really is.
That was such a meta-comedy, known for featuring real-life celebrities in their own personas, often satirizing the entertainment industry itself. His inclusion, playing himself, strongly suggests that Jake Johansson's recognized status within the industry was robust enough for him to be part of that kind of insider, self-referential world. He was in the club.
Exactly. He was recognized as part of that landscape. And his voice work on Dr. Katz, Professional Therapist, was, like you said, almost an inevitable natural fit.
Yeah, seemed perfect.
That animated series was renowned for its unique comedic style, often relying heavily on improvisational talent and the genuine conversational flow of stand-up comedians playing these heightened versions of themselves undergoing therapy.
Right, the squiggle vision.
Yeah. So for a stand-up like Johansson, with his precise delivery, his observational humor, his quick wit, it was just a perfect match for the show's signature animation style and its very cerebral conversational humor.
It all fits.
The sheer diversity of all these roles, from sitcom cameos to TV movie parts and hosting duties, it truly showcases a breadth of talent and a clear willingness to explore different creative avenues within the entertainment industry. He wasn't just sticking to his comfort zone as stand-up.
These film and television credits, when you look at them together, they really demonstrate that while stand-up comedy was his undisputed core, his passion, his talent extended effectively and successfully across various media. Mm-hmm. It further solidified and diversified his career, proving he wasn't, you know, a one-trick pony. He was a versatile entertainer who could make his mark in multiple creative arenas.
Definitely multifaceted.
Finally, let's just take a brief glimpse behind the public persona and touch on Jake Johansson's personal life. While his professional career has been very much in the public eye, we do have just a few grounding details about his private world. reminds us there's a human behind the humor.
Indeed, yeah. And the source material, the Wikipedia entry, tells us that he is married to actress Belinda Weymouth.
Okay.
And that they have one child. Now, while this information is brief, it provides a crucial kind of grounding detail about his personal world. It reminds us that even individuals with these really demanding, often very public careers, maintain private lives and personal relationships that often balance and perhaps inform their professional pursuits. It just pulls back the curtain a tiny bit on the individual.
And it's interesting to speculate, isn't it? How might having a partner who is also an actress, someone who fundamentally understands the unique demands, the uncertainties, the triumphs, the rejections of the entertainment industry, how might that influence a comedian's perspective or his material or just his approach to life and work?
Yeah, it could offer a really powerful source of support, couldn't it? A sounding board, maybe a shared understanding of the creative grind.
Someone who gets it.
Exactly. Does it offer a counterbalance to the often introspective, sometimes pretty solitary nature of stand-up comedy, where it's really just you and the microphone and your thoughts?
It anchor him?
Perhaps having family anchors him, yeah.
Yeah.
Providing both emotional stability and maybe even a fresh wellspring of new observations, anxieties, absurdities that could fuel fresh comedic material. You know, the daily negotiations of family life, the parenting mishaps, the shared experiences with a spouse who truly gets it.
Material is everywhere in family life.
It certainly is. And that shared understanding of the creative life, with all its triumphs and challenges, it could foster a uniquely supportive environment, allowing both partners to navigate the often turbulent waters of show business with maybe a deeper sense of stability. And of course, raising a child inevitably introduces a whole new dimension of experiences and humor. It offers a fresh wellspring of material. It shifts your perspective, provides a different lens through which to view the world, often softening the edges or highlighting completely new absurdities. This detail really completes the picture of Jake Johansson as an individual, bridging that public persona with a private life that provides essential context and depth to his professional journey, grounds the star in the reality of everyday existence.
So, wrapping this up, we've journeyed through Jake Johansson's really remarkable life and career, from that unexpected academic start in Iowa, steeped in science and logic,
vet med and chemical engineering,
to becoming this record-setting legend of late-night comedy, with a few truly surprising turns and some incredibly unwavering choices along the way.
What stands out most profoundly from this deep dive, for me at least, is the immense power of that unwavering conviction.
Yeah.
The sheer courage to pursue a singular passion, even if it means abandoning a conventional, stable path that, frankly, others might deem much more sensible.
Mm-hmm.
His story vividly illustrates the immense value of artistic integrity. It's just so clearly evident in that monumental choice to prioritize his unique comedic vision, even when faced with a role as potentially iconic and career-defining as George Costanza in Seinfeld.
A role that could have brought a totally different kind of fame.
Absolutely. A perhaps more universally recognizable kind of fame. He chose authenticity over potentially easy notoriety.
And above all, I think it highlights the profound power of just consistent quality work, that relentless dedication, that almost scientific approach maybe to refining his craft.
46 times.
Yeah. That earned him an unparalleled record-setting relationship with a late-night icon like David Letterman, and ultimately this lasting, undeniable legacy in the incredibly competitive world of stand-up comedy.
It's a career built not on fleeting trends or some single lucky break, but on genuine talent and an uncompromising commitment to his craft, day in, day out, for decades.
So considering the unique path Jake Johansson forged, building this enduring career defined by deeply personal stand-up and these unique, impactful choices, rather than maybe relying on a single massive breakout moment, it raises an important question, I think, for you, our listener, to maybe mull over.
Yeah, what do you think is truly more valuable in a creative career? Is it that single, universally recognized breakout role that fundamentally defines you for the rest of your life?
The Costanza path, perhaps?
Maybe. Or is it the slow burn, consistent impact built on decades of dedicated, diverse, and deeply personal work where you maintain absolute control of your artistic voice? The Johansson path.
It's something to consider, isn't it? Until our next deep dive.